It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. Well, we have to open this episode by apologizing to our listeners for the sound delay. William was a couple of minutes late getting here, so we started recording a couple minutes, so you're going to notice a delay of a couple minutes between playing the sound and it getting to your ears.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I mean, the good news is after those couple of minutes, then you're sort of synced up.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless, you know, you and someone else are, well, no, they'll have the same thing. Okay, I guess if you're in the room right now, then later when you listen to it, it's gonna come later than it did when you were...
I think the only thing they'll notice is it'll keep going for like 5 minutes after they shut it off.
Okay. I assume that happens most of the time.
Oh, well, maybe.
Actually, I assume they leave the room halfway through. So, you're really getting shaggy there, hippie.
I know.
You're gonna... have to see a surgeon.
I'll have to do something about
that.
Yep.
Those are the ones that pull your teeth and cut your hair, right? I hope this is actually working. Once again, we've got the really little...
Oh, like it's not getting very much volume.
Deal showing. Did something happen over here? Punks. I don't know. Let's do that. That'll screw with everybody. There you go. Now, we'll wait while you adjust your volume. It didn't actually do much, so... All right, anyway. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that is exclusively promoting the new anime show about adorable children and their super cute pets solving crimes on the Big Island. Kauai, Hawaii. It's coming this fall on, Freestyle, probably. That sounds like their kind of deal.
Do you ever get mad?
Crunchyroll?
That you can't actually pitch some of this stuff to people because you just know that it would catch on and you'd be, like, really super.
No, I still feel like they would want me to do follow-up work. And I'm not okay with that. So, nope.
Well, all right then.
So I just toss them out there a lot. Like, for example, one of those shops that's like part antique store and part like new age bookstore. The kind of place where somebody will sell you a Mugwai.
Okay.
Like that kind of place. Open one of those stores. Call it Curio City. Get it?
Sure.
The sign might even have to say get it. Like get it. That. Get it? Curio City.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone's already thought of that.
No. If they did, they owe me money. Patent pending or whatever.
Right.
Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 443.
There we go. He's late because he was counting episodes.
Yep. On my fingers.
Yes.
And I'd get lost and I'd have to start over.
Yes, Addy? Did you want something? He's just sitting there looking like a dumbass. One of his favorite things is just yelling for attention.
I see.
Oh, yeah. For those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magic. In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, good people, clever people, motorcyclists driving by outside, write in to that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, not jokes or puns, but like questions, topics, things like that. The hat magically on its own transmogrifies.
That's your word right there.
It's not my word. Other people, I just borrow it. Transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its equatorially impaired servants. No, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't either.
Draw the note cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air. Talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is most of it.
Most of it. Yep.
Most of it.
Sometimes all of it.
Yep. And we have no idea how people feel about that.
No. They don't seem
we
to
don't know if the favorite or least favorite episodes are the ones with no questions. We don't know if more questions makes more happy or sad. We do know that Stu doesn't know how to ask questions but likes what we come up with anyway. which seems to fit Stu, so I'm fine with that. So how was your week?
Oh, it's okay. Nothing really to report. Mm. I mean, we.
I don't think that's true. I know you have at least one thing to report on.
What's that?
You have exciting news about a sequel.
A sequel?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That I didn't know about till you told me.
Yes.
Why wouldn't I have known about it till you told me? That's what's weird.
Because I'm connected. I got my finger on the pulse.
There's going to be a second Tomb Raider with Alicia Vikander in it, and I'm very excited about that. But you
and
know,
I'm surprised.
When I read all the stuff about it, people just talk like, "Oh yeah, this was going to happen. It didn't make a ton of money, but it was low budget, so it made enough money." And I was like, I heard nothing.
It is
nothing.
Right in the space that I say is a very gray area.
Yeah,
I'm not like. In disbelief that it's getting a sequel, but I would not have been surprised if it didn't.
Well, and then I read some other article that talked about something called, they called the Tomb Raider effect, applying to the first Tomb Raider movies with Angelina Jolie in them, you know?
Yep.
About how the first movie wasn't very good.
No.
The second movie was better, but because the...
Sort of.
Well, in comparison.
All right.
Because the point they're trying to make is if you make a first movie that's not very good, but it makes just enough money for you to get to second, even if the second one's better, you might not get a third because based on the badness of the first movie, nobody will have necessarily seen the second movie.
On the other hand, sometimes you make a movie like Olympus Has Fallen, which is a terrible, shitty movie, and it somehow gets a sequel called London Has Fallen, that is somehow even worse and more terrible, and yet somehow it gets a third movie called Angel Has Fallen that everybody seems to agree is only of average badness and consequently much better than the other two, and it takes the box office number one spot for at least 2 weeks in a row. We'll see what next week looks like.
I guess.
What the elf?
I mean, I hope it does well, but I do think that...
Oh, you mean Tomb Raider. I thought you meant Angel Has Fallen.
No, Tomb Raider. I hope it does well.
I don't hope that one does well.
But...
a pox on the movie series.
I don't know how it's going to. I mean, even if it's a better movie, even if it's better received by critics or whatever, I think the fact that the first one wasn't very well... received.
It's coming out, well, it's currently going to come out in March of 2021.
Yeah.
So who it's up against will make a big difference.
I mean, I liked the first one, actually. It wasn't...
I recall. It was a very difficult conversation with us. You liked it to an equal yet opposing degree to which I disliked it, and I disliked it a lot.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, Labor Day was this past week, and I went home which I don't usually do, and my...
You spend the weekend on the streets?
My niece and nephew were there, who...
From Alaska?
Well, okay, so... I've got a nephew and then a niece in the middle and then another nephew. That's it, because none of the rest of us had kids. But the niece is going to Simpson College in Indianola that I might have mentioned.
Oh.
So and this is her sophomore year. So she was around all year last year. But also my nephew, the older kid, he's getting a business started in Des Moines. And he's actually been in the state for a while too. So, I mean, we'll be seeing.
Wow! I hope people can actually hear us.
We'll be seeing both of them quite a bit. Here's the thing about his business. I don't know if you've heard of this kind of thing, but he's starting
vapes.
No.
I've heard those are big.
Although there's that illness that's been going around, and they think it's from people vaping, like black market stuff.
Oh.
Anyway, no, his business is going to make packaged like treats, like cookies and whatever, but they're going to be high protein things. But what the source of the high protein is bugs.
Oh, okay.
So.
I was going to say, I was with you. I was about to show you a package of some stuff that I ate like that, but this protein source in that is whey.
Yeah.
And not bugs.
Yeah, that's...
I don't know that I would eat them if they were bugs. Although, if they tasted it as good as this, I might. I've eaten bugs.
So you don't have any particular issue eating bugs?
I mean... Yes and no. I have no particular issue conceptually with eating bugs. I do have an issue with eating things that taste like I'm eating bugs.
Well, it wouldn't be like that.
See, I've heard that said before, but all of the things involved, and some of the things I've eaten were just bugs. And those tasted like bugs.
Sure.
Like
chocolate-covered crickets or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah. Some of the things I've eaten have been bugs inside of baked goods and things. And it still kind of tasted like bugs. And it's possible it could have the frog leg effect for me. Frog legs are the one food like this. I can eat them. They really do taste like chicken. It's fine. My brain can't stop being like, you're eating a frog's legs. And it like creeps me out. So I can do it, but it's wholly a mental thing. Like, it tastes fine. I eat it. I chew it. I swallow it. I'm not gagging or anything, but very quickly my brain's just like, stop it, it's the leg of a frog, and I have no idea why. So the bug thing could end up like that. I have drawn the line, because mostly when I eat bugs, it's because somebody has brought me bugs in the hope that they can watch me eat them. And I've recently said, because I found out this is a thing, I am not eating a tarantula or really probably any spiders.
Oh,
I can't cope.
Well, one
like
of
my tongue feels uncomfortable right now just talking about it.
One of the selling points of it, if you tried them and you didn't really notice, if like to you this is just a tasty high protein
treat, then I'd
treat,
be all over that.
The benefit that they pitch is that it's more environmentally sustainable.
Absolutely.
Because most of the high protein things have soy, obviously, which we know what there are problems with soy production. Whey, of course.
Yeah, dairy
product.
Stuff.
And so lots of the things that they usually put, chickpeas is the other thing. I don't know if there's any particular environmental issues with chickpeas. But these...
bugs are just really easy to farm.
Yeah, and they're not just manufacturing the product. They're raising the insects.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like a... really good deal. I mean, it's not something I would consume, but it sounds like a pretty good deal if you can get past the cringe factor.
If it tastes good, no, hook me up. I'll eat them.
And I asked them why they were basing themselves in Iowa, and they thought that it would be a good place to base for a food-based type of company, although I'm not sure that that's true or not. I mean, Iowa has the food prizes in Iowa, and of course we produce a lot of agricultural products here, but all of them are not environmentally friendly.
For some reason.
I mean, you know, the way we raise corn and soybeans and hogs and eggs, those are our three top things. we're not very sustainable in how we raise them. I'm sad to say.
And we got a lot of beef, also bad.
And the beef we're not producing, we're feeding somewhere else.
Yeah.
And feeding them things.
When you said that, why are they doing it here? And that I got in my head on a Cosby show when the oldest Sandra and her husband Elvin quit their careers as a lawyer and a doctor to open up a wilderness store. Reminds me of that.
Well, this
I think they eventually gave up and went back to doctor and lawyering.
This oldest nephew of mine, he's had a lot of ideas for businesses and stuff. He started out, the first idea he had,
DJing.
No, he was in he was in airships, like dirigibles and things of that nature.
Huh.
And he was trying to think of ways to market them to
old-timey army people.
No, the way I looked at it was what he was kind of trying to do was claim some of the drone market, because if you make your drone vehicle if you make it a dirigible or an airship, it can be a lot quieter,
more energy efficient, the battery lasts longer,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember back then telling him, farmers are using drones now, and I think they would love to have something quieter, because one of the big things they use a drone for is to find exactly where the herd is, if they put the herd of cows out to pasture. And, you send a drone out there, and you find them, but now they're running. And it's like, I didn't want that to happen. And also, a lot of farmers kind of value their peace and quiet, and drones can be so loud. Mm. But I don't know what happened with that. He was working with some guys on that, and they had some really good proposals for using these air vehicles for a variety of purposes. But now he's sort of switched to this thing. And he's done a lot of other stuff. He was one of those, kids that gets out of school and backpacks across Europe kind of stuff. And that's just the kind of guy he is, sort of a restless spirit, adventuresome. He didn't go to college.
He eats bugs.
he's very smart, good kid. So it'll be fun to have both he and his sister around for
my nephew's a confetti licker.
However long that'll be. Well, I mean, if the business
literally this last weekend, he licked confetti and turned his tongue purple because he wanted to get it wet so it would stick to something. It was made out of tissue paper.
I told him he should come here because, I mean, there's a lot of people who are willing to eat new things.
Oh, yeah, no, we're totally freaks around here.
And also, the University of Iowa has a small business incubator, and maybe they could make use of some of those resources, but I don't know, we'll see. But, yeah, that was Labor Day, and really not much else going on. What about you?
Lots of stuff.
I'm sure.
Lots and lots and lots of stuff.
Writing stuff?
Yeah, I've been writing. I don't want to talk too much about that because you and I pretty much made our last episode unaccessible. But just talking about that. But that's going along. Just last night, I realized I have to redo. Then this happened with Odd Wings right around the same point. I'm probably about 5,000 words in, maybe closer to 6 now. And I realized I have to redo a whole subplot. But with Odd Wings, it was because I came up with an idea that was way better. Mm. With Becky James, I realized suddenly that my light pulp adventure space opera thing was inadvertently attempting to tackle the concept of PTSD in the military. And I was like, no. First of all, not that light. Second of all, I don't know what I'm saying about that, so I'm not going to say anything about that. So, changing a few things around there. But it's simple enough that I'm not going back to rewrite now. I'll get it in the next draft. But
I've run into that problem with one of the episodes I'm writing. I had it all kind of mapped out, and then I got this idea. Ooh, I'll make this episode, I'll put some elements of a certain a popular horror story in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really excited about that, and I rolled a whole bunch of it, and it's like, what I'd mapped out before and this don't really go together at all. So now what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Am I going to push it away and just do what I planned before, or am I going to push what I had before away? And so it's been kind of a pain.
I just have to be really careful not to say anything about anything because I have no business saying anything. So, but I think this will work. It's very weird because I have 7 main characters from jump. Like, right out the gate, introducing 7 characters.
That's quite a few.
It's busy.
Yeah.
Like, first scene, 7. It's the crew of a spaceship, basically. And that's the whole thing. And it's... Yeah, it's very, very busy. And... So that's a little tricky to manage. And I'm trying to think back of, like, other books that I've known that are like that. And I'm like, I'm not sure I do. Also, I think I'm still feeling out the characters. There's a lot of arguing happening in the book. Kind of too much. To where I'm like, I'm not sure these people like each other. And they're supposed to really like each other. They're supposed to be, like, essentially a family. I'm like, this is... So, we'll see. And I think some of that may just be that some of the characters are just archetypes at this point, and I don't really know who they are, and I may have to clear up some of that, but...
Some of that stuff gets a little weird. Fixed when you work in some alliances or pair-offs or anything, but maybe you don't want to do that.
Well, no, I've done that. Mm. The problem is they're also a weird polyamorous amoeboid of sorts. Mm. So, of the... 7 people. And again, first couple chapters, this all comes out. 2 of them are in a relationship that is openly open. 1 of the other people there is an ex of one that's in that relationship. 1 of them is essentially asexual. 1 of them is an alien species who can't really participate in any romance or anything, but is very keen to be a voyeur involved in these things. And 2 others are paired off, one of them essentially being monogamous and the other one not. And it's sort of stated that this crew has a history of sort of switching people. Like, that becomes a thing, that the quarters and who's staying in the quarters has varied over years based on who's getting along with whom. And they're all pretty polyamorous in that nature. And so then that becomes hard to follow.
That's a lot to cover in 2 chapters.
It really is. It really is a lot. Well, and I do it right out the door, because you get back from the first. The thing starts in the middle of an adventure, as it were, sure. and it ends. And essentially, somebody suggests a celebratory orgy, and so you just go around and get the various reactions to it. And most of the people end up not being involved for a variety of reasons. But it's my shorthand way of like. Now you see where everybody lies based on their reactions to that comment. And man, is the language translation thing both fun and complicated. The whole, like, everybody has universal translation, but they don't have idioms.
Right.
And so we're playing with that. 2 people got in a fight and literally started using, like, their culture's swear words and, like, couldn't understand exactly. They knew they were insulting each other, but neither knew what the other one was saying exactly. And it's all very odd, but it's going. I'm happy with it. It's very fun knowing where the story's going already.
Sure.
So that's neat. Last weekend was at my in-laws for the 50th anniversary celebration.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
It was. It went really well. It was kind of tiring. It was a very busy day for those of us putting it together, but it went off really well.
Good.
We rented a hall. It was sort of an open house thing. Tons of people showed up. I think everybody had a really good time. The decorations were cool. Afterwards, there was a small family dinner, which small meant 16 people, and family meant like half the people involved were actually related. My one pre-assigned job for the entire thing was to get my hands on the check for that dinner before my mother-in-law could.
Mm.
And I did it, though it proved to be harder than expected.
Really?
Yes. My mother-in-law, so my parents, they like to pay for everything too. But my parents are the sort that if you're like, we want to take care of this. Like, this is our present to you, we would like to pay for it. My parents would be like, okay, thank you. My mother-in-law can't be done. I have now twice been able to pay for a meal with her, and the only way to do it is to trick her. One of them was when she came here for free and brought her husband and some of her children, and they painted our house for free. And afterwards, we went out to dinner, and I had to trick her into getting my hands on that bill. Mm. But this one, I was assigned to this because we all knew this would happen. What I didn't realize is there were several other unrelated older people at this dinner who all would not go for this either. So some, like, overheard what I was doing and tried to step in. Other people were trying to already arrange separate checks when it started. So, but I did it. And then after I did it and everybody's sitting around, I realized we have to say something. Because they're all having a good time talking, but they're also waiting for the checks. So we finally said, like, you guys can stay as long as you want, but the check's paid for. And, man, you could, like, audibly hear the blinks of all these older Midwestern couples looking at me saying, I just paid you for your meal. That got weird. They kind of freaked out a little bit. They calmed down a little bit when they found out that I had paid for it, but all of the children were going to be sharing the expense, then they kind of calmed down a little.
I see.
But it was a little weird for that. But no, it was a good time. I think it went really well. I think my in-laws really liked it, so that was good. What else is going on? We watched some stuff. I'm a little surprised you didn't watch some stuff. We're still watching Righteous Gemstones. I think I still like it. It's very odd. We haven't watched Carnival Row yet, but we did watch the first episode of the new Dark Crystal show.
Yeah, we haven't watched it at all.
I'm surprised.
Well, my wife's watching some other things.
Okay.
I'm watching them too, but I'm not paying as much attention. It's really more than something she's interested in.
So yeah, we just ended up watching the first episode of that.
Was it any good?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Up front, it's gorgeous. We're going to watch it all. Like, it's the effects alone are worth it, without a doubt. This was very much a setup first episode. Lots of disparate characters and disparate storylines that we just sort of have tipped off. They're all going to sort of come together in certain ways.
Sure.
It seems to be attempting to overlap the mythic and fairly black and white morality of the film.
Sure.
With more nuanced political machinations you would associate with modern TV series.
Hmm.
I do not think those fit well together.
Mm.
And I'm not sure how that's going to play out. I'm also very curious because, I mean, this is set like 1,000 years before the movie, I think.
Mm.
And I know a lot about the world and its history.
Right.
Even outside the movies, I've studied up some stuff.
Okay.
We have a narrator for the whole thing done by Sigourney Weaver. I feel like they have to be playing this straight and adhering to, like, the history and everything. So I'm really hoping she's an unreliable narrator, because she has already, from the beginning, stated things that I'm like, that's not actually how the history went.
Hmm.
But it seems like a major plot point of, like, most people on the planet don't really know, like, there's secrets being hidden. So I'm hoping it's all tied up into that, because I'm like... Sure. You're very much contradicting a lot of things that I know. And even things that if you just saw the movie, you'd be like, wait, but what about? So we'll see how that all plays out. But it's really gorgeous. Great puppetry, great performances. So we'll see what happens. I have not heard good things about Carnival Row, but we will be checking it out.
We will watch it. We just haven't gotten around to it.
Also saw a movie last night.
What'd you see?
Oh, boy. The Oath.
Well, that sounds familiar.
There's a TV show with that title, too. Also, a lot of things just involving oaths. This is a 2018 movie We watch it. It's on Hulu right now. If you want to watch it, not you. You don't have Hulu, but if Hatlings have Hulu, you can watch it for free there, or no added cost, I guess. 2018, written, directed in his first ever directing, and starring Ike Barinholtz, actor, comedian of Mad TV fame for me, and the Mindy Project for a lot of other people. He's been around in other places. He's competent and has been around for a while. It also stars Tiffany Haddish, John Cho, Carrie Brownstein, weirdly. It is a story set in, I guess you'd say, the near future, but basically the present.
Okay.
And the current president introduces a thing where there is now a patriotic pledge, an oath, that people can sign pledging their loyalty to the U.S. government.
Okay.
It is completely optional. And you have until the day after Thanksgiving to do it, which at the time where it's being announced is like 10 months away. There are benefits to signing it that are overt, like you get a tax credit and things like this if you do. Ike Barinholtz and his wife Tiffany Haddish and their kid, actor I'm not familiar with, are super liberal and find this horrifying.
Okay.
And hate it. Cut to the Thanksgiving holiday being held at their house with their older and more conservative parents and equally liberal sister and her husband and their kids and his incredibly conservative brother and her girlfriend. And basically it's a black comedy, but it's all about sort of the current political climate. The whole thing is like trying not to talk about this and being so outraged that this is happening. Of course, the deadline to do is the very next day.
Sure.
And a coworker of his who was big on it, they went to on protests about it together and stuff, has decided to sign it because he thought it was better for his family and all this stuff. And so there's all this tension. And Ike Barinholtz is very much, he's very news obsessed and he's very a very angry liberal at this point. And his mother made them all promise they weren't going to talk politics during the holidays. That's very hard to do. And then shit gets really dark in the last third or so of the movie. Like, it's listed as a black comedy. I would say it's sort of a drama for like two thirds, and then like bordering on psychological horror for the last third, all interspersed with jokes. But like, it's not funny except during the jokes, and some of the jokes are really good.
Yeah.
But they're a big tonal shift. And I'm not sure I can judge this movie.
Because it can't decide what it is? Or?
No, because I'm too biased.
Oh.
It's very reminiscent. I mean, and the movie's nothing like this, but the situation is very reminiscent. There was a movie sometime in the W. Bush years called American Dreams, spelled with a Z at the end.
I've heard of that. I don't know if I saw it.
And it was simultaneously mocking American Idol and the culture wrapped around that and George W. Bush and the politicization around him. It was not a good movie.
Who was in that, though?
Mandy Moore, Dennis Quaid, Hugh Grant played essentially Simon Cowell in that. It was not good. I really loved it. I went and saw it in the theater.
Oh.
It was incredibly cathartic for that exact time period.
Oh, I see.
But now, looking back, I'm like, no, that's not a good movie. But I really loved it for that moment. And I feel like I did not like this movie for the exact same reason. Like, give me 10 years, I might feel different about it. Mm. But right now, too real.
Oh.
And like, Ike Barinholtz's character, the main character, I empathize with him so much, and I feel like I have a version of him inside of me. I also, without question, hate him more than any other character in the movie.
Those things usually do go together.
And it's so rough to do. And, like, the movie just stressed me out because I related way too much to, like, all these shitty things he's doing. And I'm like, oh, my God, I want to do those things. Or in a lot of cases, I have done those things over this. And yeah, the tonal thing was very weird. Trish pointed out, it's a 2018 movie. It's possible, because things don't get better in this administration. They get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. It's possible it would have been slightly more satirizing a year ago.
Oh, sure.
It's hard to say. And also, it's very much, you can tell, Ike Barinholtz had some shit on his mind. And instead of journaling, he made a movie.
Sure.
And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I mean, it's very clearly a one-man show that has a bunch of other people in it. Mm. Although that being said, the standout performances are not him. Tiffany Haddish did a wonderful job. John Cho, I am constantly saying to myself, I'm surprised they cast John Cho in that role, and he did a really good job. Like, in everything he's in. And I don't know if it's me not understanding John Cho or if it's some weird low-level racism, because he's also very seldom cast for a part that requires him to be Asian, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I'm always – I mean, I like him, but I'm always like, huh, they picked him. Wow, he's really good at this. Like, I don't know what it is. I love John Cho. John Cho is awesome. He's apparently really good at picking projects, because even the things I don't like, I'm like, but his part was really good. So, yeah, in general, I did not feel good about this film. It made me very uncomfortable, and it stressed me out. That being said, it's made me think about some shit. So that might be worth it for that.
Okay.
It's not long. It's like an hour and a half. Like I said, it's on Hulu right now. It's called The Oath. But, yeah, be prepared for it to trigger some shit. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I haven't got a lot of reading done. I haven't got a lot of slaughtering my way through ancient Egypt done lately. Assassin's Creed Origins.
Oh.
Slaughtering my way through ancient Egypt. I bought a book for my Kindle. After I finish this Discworld book, I'm reading The Dispossessed by Ursula Le Guin. Because it's just been coming up a whole bunch. That particular book lately, and I really wanted to read it. And so I'm like, screw it. No one bought it. So I'm going to read it next.
You haven't talked much, very often, about your role-playing group.
We did actually manage to game this week. We haven't been managed to do that lately. And we finished the adventure. And that was pretty cool. Because it was meant to be kind of a lighthearted side adventure without a lot of consequences and just tossing out some clues towards what was going to happen next and just sort of a palate cleanser, and it ended up taking like 2 months for us to manage it. So that was a little annoying, but we did it, and it's hilarious to me. So you've played Fate.
Mm-hmm.
So you know about Fate points.
Yeah,
you get them and then you can spend them to do cool things.
I wrote the gingerbread thing around the Fate core system.
My players blew so many fate points on what was essentially in-game frat party games with no consequences. And I mean, they knew that up front. The bulk of this adventure was them going to a particular Candlemas traditional party in town. Candlemas in bulk, the point where Groundhog's Day, the point where spring and winter are fighting for who's going to control the holiday, essentially. And it's basically just the young people get together. Some of them dress up as the spirits of spring. Some of them dress up as the spirits of winter. And they drink heavily and they party and they have these contests to see which side will win.
Sure.
And they legit were spending their fate points to try and win these contests. Which is funny. They weren't even all on the same side. I had anticipated, because some of them have supernatural powers. So I'm like, tug of war. are you going to use your strength? And he's like, oh, yeah. But then they're tossing fate points. I'm like, holy crap. You guys are way into this. But yeah, so I felt it was a pretty good adventure. It ended pretty darkly, but that's how everything does around there. They all got drugged, and then they got to see some bad things happen. But that's going to be the next adventure, following up on that. So that's good. So yeah, I was pretty pleased with that. I've been, partially because this stupid little adventure has been taking so long, I've been trudging a little bit. I'm at a point right now where I'm like, I'm tired of this campaign.
Mm.
But I always get this way. And then I cancel it, and it's a very unfulfilling ending. These players like this campaign. I just gave them lots of new shit and exposition and powers and things like that. Can't do it to them. And I know I've got the ideas. Like, I know what's going to happen and what fun things could be possible. So I'm like, I just got to power through and get this moving again. So I think that'll work.
How many little adventures are you going to have with this?
I've been thinking of it as a TV show. And I'm thinking of it in terms of seasons.
Mm.
And part of it is I tend to do... I'm trying to focus on sort of specific antagonist arcs.
Okay.
So we're in early season 2.
Okay.
I'd say we've got at least 3 seasons. Back in the day, I thought there could be 4 or 5. I'm probably going to try and make it 3 or at least make them shorter.
Because
I know what the different categories of things are that need resolution in the grand scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to play out all the threads we've got. But we'll see. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to play with it. There's a lot of stuff that can be very monster of the week,
mm-hmm.
which will be very active and they'll enjoy, but it's not too taxing on them or me.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it'll go on for a while. In the real world terms, I'd say probably at least another year in it. We'll see.
And this is something you've made up yourself? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Aside from the
It's all out of
system.
My butt. I mean, I steal shit from everywhere, but yeah, it's all out of my butt. That tends to be how I prefer it.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's more fun.
Hmm.
When I'm taking existing properties, there's always the concern. Part of my brain is like the nerdy one that likes that property. And it's like, am I doing it right or anything? And also I feel hemmed in. Like, this would be cool, but it really wouldn't work that way in that universe. It's like, well, fuck it.
Well, then you also go up against having a player who might know more about it than you
do. Oh, I could tell you some stories from high school.
And that would be very annoying.
Oh, yeah, Star Wars.
Every time you want something to happen, someone would actually use.
So bad.
Actually.
I had to yell at him eventually. Like, no. Luke just intuitively could make his own lightsaber. I will murder you. Yeah. The problem is I am a little bit excited about what we might do next. It's going to be something using the gumshoe system. I've got it narrowed down to 2 games, but I'm really curious about that system. So part of me is excited for that. So I'm sort of purposely not reading much more about that because I'm like, you got a long time for that. Meanwhile, the Star Trek thing is happening. The Star Trek Adventures game. Holy shit, have I not talked to you about this?
I may have forgotten.
So there's 1,000 role-playing games based on Star Trek. But there's one that came out like 2 years ago called Star Trek Adventures.
Okay.
And it's supposed to recreate sort of the feel of being like the crew of a ship in one of the shows.
Okay.
And you can actually pick. It's got various time points. And one of my players is running it for me and some of the members of the group, but mostly a bunch of friends of his that are not members of the group.
Mm.
And we've just started this process, and it's set basically right after Next Gen.
Okay.
And it's set in a fictitious new frontier outside of the 4 main quadrants. There's like a new area that they've... So it's really fresh territory where none of the continuity is as much of an issue. And because of the nature of the people involved, and I kind of thought I saw this coming, so I was holding back when I was doing characters. Yeah, I'm the captain.
You are?
Yeah, nobody wanted to go remotely near command.
Hmm.
Like, there's somebody who's going to be the helmsman, but that's it. Like, no other PC is involved in command. And I kind of thought that would happen, and so I kind of steered myself that way.
So how did you know? I mean,
because of the people involved. I knew they're people who don't like to be in charge.
But it's just a game.
They don't like to be in charge just in the game either.
That's interesting.
And they had ideas in their head of things. Somebody was really excited to be a security officer. The other ones, I'm like, no, they're totally going to be an engineering type and things like that.
I would think it would be like, I mean, I don't know anything about this kind of stuff. I've played a Star Wars role-playing game, but if I was going to do Star Wars.
Star Trek. This is Star Trek.
I know, but I'm talking about Star Wars. If I was going to do Star Wars, I would be worried that everybody would want to be a Jedi. And if I was going to do Star Trek, I'd be worried that everybody wanted to be the captain.
In general, most role-playing games work hard to avoid having one of the PCs be in charge.
Okay.
And in my experience trying to make games where one of the PCs were in charge, it was a hard time to get any of them to agree to do it.
Huh.
I think they're just too timid about it. And it may be my specific players, but they just don't want that level of control, because then they'll get, you know, they feel that there's responsibility tied to it.
Mm.
So if the game's not going good, it's because I'm a sucky commander. However, in my case, because I know the player involved, and because unlike most of the players, not all, I've been doing a lot of these games and stuff, I'm kind of excited for it. All of my stats and everything are built around things that, like, help inspire others or make teamwork work and stuff. It's quite possible, especially since it's the next gen time frame. I'll mostly stay on the bridge while the away team does stuff. And I'm like, I'll just figure out what plot the GM is hoping we're going to do, and we'll order them to go handle that. And I'm fine with that. I'm also fine with sitting back. And also, it's one of those games where you have a main character, but you also make, like, side characters that you can play if your character isn't there at the time or whatever.
Mm.
So, like, potentially, there could be a separate XO character that I could play that would go down with the away team. Or what I'm still thinking of suggesting to him is I have essentially a running red shirt character that probably dies every adventure or two, but then I make one that's very similar with a very similar skill set, except it's a yellow shirt in next gen, but still. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, Intrepid class ship, so like the one in Voyager. I'm a human captain of African descent, but I was born and raised on a star base and things like that. I'm not from Earth per se, but I'm the only freaking human. We have two half Klingons. One's a half Klingon Betazoid and one's a half Klingon Vulcan. And I can't even cope. We also have somebody who's playing, I don't know what the hell is playing. We also have somebody who's playing. The thing is, the adventures let you do species that, like, only showed up in the animated series. So, like, I think she's playing one of these cat people. Speaking of which, did you ever watch the animated series?
When I was a kid.
I was recently prompted to, like, look it up.
I don't remember anything about it.
It was just more Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, it was a kid's show, but it was basically more Star Trek. And it dealt with pretty heavy issues.
Yeah.
But what I also find amazing is there's an episode in it where they meet this person and he makes friends with them. And he takes them to this planet where people do magic and witchcraft. And it turns out that these people who can do magic and witchcraft used to live on Earth. And then they were persecuted during the Salem witch trials and killed and stuff like that. So they left. And now these people want to judge the Enterprise crew because they're from that planet that did that. And so they put them on trial and stuff like that. And eventually they get free and we all get along. And then at the very end that you find out that their friend, who's still their friend and perfectly nice guy, actually Lucifer, the fallen angel.
Oh.
And I'm like,
I don't remember that one.
There is, and it's not like it was a trick. Like, he's still their friend. You just find out that's who he is. He's still a normal guy. And I'm like, that would not possibly fly on a TV show, let alone a kids' TV show nowadays.
Yeah,
we got people dying, we got issues of genocide and stuff like that, like heavy shit going down on this show. And it was award-winning children's show, like it was winning awards for children's programming at the time.
I didn't know that.
Ugh. And it had like 3 or 4 episodes that were sequels to actual episodes from the show.
I mean, when I was a kid and we watched it.
Harry Mudd showed up. A couple other people showed up. And
it was, yeah, it just seemed like watching Star Trek. It's just animated. Yeah.
Except they had better visual effects because it was cartoons.
Yeah, kind of.
And that's why you had species in that like, you're like, you never could have done that on TV because they weren't shaped right and things like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got like 10 minutes left, so we should draw something out of that.
I also avoid leaders and stuff when I role play.
Yep.
But I do it because I'm afraid I'll be overbearing.
I just want something to do because I tend to have a party who, when at a crossroads of things, everybody's like, well, I'm fine with any choice. And then they all say that. And I'm like, all right. So it's been 2 hours. Mm. Somebody has to decide. And I'm sick of making NPCs that just tell you to go left. What'd you got?
Azure Talon.
Oh, God damn it. At least we know we can probably fit it into the 10 minutes.
Rat-a-tat Hatters.
Rat-a-tat Hatters. Yeah, he was high when he wrote this.
How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Himalayan salt lamp? Hopefully not electrocuted, Azure Talon. Oh, he's working on it, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, they're not all the same size.
So. No, not at all. Also, if you're going from the top, like a lot of them have an opening in the top.
Oh, do they?
And you just, because a lot of them also are just candles. Like tea light holders instead of an electrical lamp.
Although
I guess his is an electrical one. But yeah, you got to put the bulb in someplace.
Well, that's true, but on the bottom usually.
I didn't know they were salt at first. Mm. Like, we have one around here that's one of the candle holder ones. And somebody's like, yeah, no, it's just salt crystal. I was like, really? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, it just looks like a rock. And they're like, yeah. And so, licked my finger, rubbed it on there, licked my finger. It's salt.
No kidding.
Yep. Just tastes like salt. Mm. And that's so weird to me. So I'm like, if you just put it out in the rain, just... just gone. It's weird.
There's no way to answer your question, Azure Talon, because they're all different.
We never made it without biting. That's what the turtle says.
Well, that's what the owl says.
No, 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 no.
Well, that's the turtle.
I never made it without biting.
The toothless turtle. It's the owl.
Ask Mr. Owl. And the owl
said,
let's find out. One, two, three. Three.
Yep. Turtle said, never made it without biting. And he had a weird-shaped...
Ask Mr. Owl.
It seems like he had a weird-shaped shell, the turtle did. Or maybe not. Maybe it was just very circular or round. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like...
Well, I mean, the whole thing was like somebody had left a Ziggy cartoon in the rain. Yeah. It was... I don't know who... I feel like it's probably like a famous animator or something. I recently had cause to see the comic strip about Tootsie Rolls and their mascot Commander. It's not Commander Tootsie. It was something else, but he was basically a superhero.
I kind of remember
ran around with kids.
Yeah, I kind of remember.
And they'd have adventures. And before they went to save the day, they would always eat Tootsie Rolls for quick energy.
Quick energy, yeah.
It was bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just shocked you didn't have them smoking cigarettes, but I guess that was probably in a different comic.
You know, when you put salt licks out for, like, animals and stuff, it is kind of surprising how quickly they disappear. It's like... That's really amazing. Because if you get a salt lick and you put it out, you think, it's not that big, I guess, but it's a pretty big block, and you think, this will last forever.
Yeah.
And you put it somewhere where nothing, no rain or anything gets on it. But then it's like, it doesn't
I just love
long.
How it, like, gets the one spot for like, the tongue shape. Right. Now, okay.
Right.
Let me preface this by saying, I'm confident that the answer is some variety of humans fucked it up for them. But, more specifically, why do animals need salt licks in the sense that presumably they didn't before we had the technology to make salt licks for them, and presumably they still were alive.
Well,
I mean, I understand the salt lick is giving them sodium and minerals and things they need. Where did they get it before us?
Well, I think, I mean, so many of these animals that you put these out for are domesticated. So, I mean, before us, I mean, there wasn't really a before us. But a lot of the stuff you do.
I mean, I get that if it's like, you know, like beef cattle and stuff like that. Those have been basically genetically modified by us, and there never was a wild version of it. But, like, I've seen places where people have, like, deer. On a farm, and they're domesticated deer, but they're just deer.
Well,
and they have a soul. Like.
It's kind of like we give a lot of. I mean, I don't know if this is that much related, but I do know that on the farm, you give a lot of things to animals for the purpose of you controlling their growth and what their muscle is like and things like that. Where, in other words. The way we raise cows, especially, it's they end up being unnaturally big, unnaturally muscly, unnaturally whatever. They don't need those things to survive.
Oh.
They need them to make the cuts of meat.
Our way of raising them modifies them in such a way that they need more of those minerals and salts than they would have.
Well, to be that way.
Yeah. Like, than they would have in a natural state.
Sure, but it's... That it's also true if humans disappeared, I mean,
like most cattle breeds are toast.
Well, that's probably right. But some of the nutrients we give them, they don't need.
Yeah.
We want them to have a certain, we want the muscle of a steak to look a certain, to be marbled a certain way, or
yes,
to have a certain fat mm-hmm. content, and we do feed them certain things. In a certain period of time and in a certain order to get them like that. If we didn't do that, they'd still be perfectly healthy. Just when they're slaughtered, the meat wouldn't be as large or as dense or as whatever we want them to be. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, does that apply to the mineral supplements that they're getting in salt licks? I'm not really sure. We didn't have livestock ourselves, so most of what I know about livestock raising is secondhand or other things I've read. But I do know that we do a lot to cows, pigs, really anything, any animal that we eat, we do things to them nutritionally to produce a certain kind of product.
Yeah.
And that animal might still survive without it just
horses,
fine.
We have this too. But
Right. And that animal might survive just fine without it.
But horses don't do nearly as much grazing when they're domesticated in general. It's not like they go out and find their own food for the most part.
Well, that's right. I mean, they're often given feed or a hay.
Yes.
But they do graze when they're standing out there.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just grass. Grass ain't that salty. So Morningstar Farms is jumping on the bandwagon of selling realistic meat substitute.
Yeah.
It just came out with it. You know what they're calling it?
No.
Incognito.
In a way, though, businesses like that, it's like you've kind of been in the business of making
meat substitutes, but not realistic ones necessarily. I mean,
as
this
realistic
is like,
as they could.
I think these are like red meat. I mean, I've seen the image, and it looks like it's ground beef in there.
Oh, okay.
They're trying to compete with Impossible and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they're claiming that they will hold up on the grill and they will bleed when you cut into them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, it is really funny how many vegetarians could not give a shit about Impossible foods because they're like, so it like tastes kind of like meat. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, okay.
Well, my nephew was asking me about that.
Yeah.
Said, well, what do you think about this Impossible burger and all this stuff? I said, no appeal for me.
No. And there are plenty of alternatives out there that don't taste like meat. Morningstar Farms makes a lot of them. Beyond Burgers, I've heard, are not particularly taste like meat. So, like, those work.
Well, the reason my nephew was curious about it was because a lot of again, their push is about having an environmentally sustainable high protein product. And so he kind of sees these meat-like substitutes as being a little bit of a competition, because I think he already knew before I told him that as a vegetarian, I don't really care. Yeah. And so the focus for those companies are probably the same people that he's kind of
are like me, basically.
Yeah.
Although I should say I know quite a few vegetarians who miss meat very much love this idea.
Right, right.
But I also know a bunch that don't. But no, it's for people who like me, and I'm like, I like meat. I'm gonna eat meat. But if you got something that I will enjoy as much as meat, and it has less environmental impact, yeah, sure, I'm all over that.
You're right. That's a big focus of their market.
But that's the thing. I am a privileged, affluent, white American. It has to be pretty darn close for me.
Yeah.
And the Impossible Burger, in the right context, is doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it could replace all burgers for me, but like, when I go get a Whopper, every time lately, it's an Impossible Whopper, and I like them.
I might have to try that, actually.
Be careful with that one.
Why?
It's not vegetarian.
Oh, really?
They cook it on the same thing where they cook all the meat and everything.
Well,
and they're very clear about that. So if it's a big deal for you, then that's a thing.
Well, I mean, whenever I go home, I have to deal with that. Yeah. So that's fine.
But, and Burger King also has a really nice just veggie burger that they've had forever.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
That's Morningstar Farms, yeah. But no, the Impossible Burger, it just tastes like a Whopper to me. And I like that. Mm. I think I could tell the difference if, like, you blindfolded me.
Sure.
But, I mean, a Whopper has so many condiments on it.
Right.
It just does really well.
Right.
So, yeah, please. All right. If you'd like to know more about the Impossible Burger, go to Burger King. If you'd like to lick a Himalayan salt lamp, just don't tell us about it. And also, you should write into the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and tell us your things about what you want to lick and how much we know about that. And then listen again next week, because hopefully you'll be able to hear that William got a haircut.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.